Here will come Blake Bortles. You will hear the crowd. You hear them already. It's a standing ovation, folks. It's a standing ovation. Listen to the crowd. I'll let them tell you. Shotgun formation for Bortles and the Jags. They blitz. It's an all-out blitz. Pump fake. Lots of time. Now he fires. Complete to Allen Robinson. Robinson gets away. To the 35, to the 40. Past the 45-yard line. All the way out to the 47-yard line. Something special happening. Rookie to rookie. All the way to the 47. That's 22 yards and a first down. Bortles takes. Play fake this time. Oh, they're going to get him. He got away from the blitz. Look at this. And now he's going to throw it down the field for Will Toffolo. And it's caught. It is caught by Will Toffolo. All the way out to the 46-yard line. By all rights, they had it dead to rights. Bortles spun away from it. And a 25-yard gain to his fullback. Empty backfield now for Blake Bortles. Two receivers to either side, plus a tight end. Straight drop. Fires to the middle of the field. That's Hearns. He makes a catch into Colts territory. To his feet. Allen Hearns is loose. Allen Hearns is inside the 20-yard line. He got away. Allen Hearns is going to score a touchdown for the Jaguars. He broke a few tackles and got it to the end zone. How do you like that?
He'll get the opportunity next week again. Now, like we said, I think it's time to start building Blake's body of work on the field.
Live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you. Tyler Devitt producing day two of the Tyler Devitt era of Jaguars Today. It's a special one, Jeff. You feel it? You feel the change in the air? We'll miss Lauren. Great.
Yeah, no, she was great. And I'll miss the music. Are we still going to have some kind of a music theme deal going on?
Well, I don't want to, you know, that's kind of Lauren's thing. So if Tyler wants to follow in her footsteps, he's welcome to do that.
Mighty big footsteps to follow in.
Absolutely. She was a stumper when it came to the music themes, particularly. So if he wants to do that for the new year, he's welcome to. We'll see how that whole thing plays out. But that was a fitting open to the show right there, because that is probably, you know, that's what this year was about more than anything to me, the debut of Blake Bortles.
Absolutely.
But good or bad, he's the guy they've hitched their wagon to, and they're, you hear Gus Bradley after the game telling you and others that we saw everything we'd hoped to see in Blake this year. Doesn't mean he threw for 4,000 yards and 50 touchdowns and all this stuff, but what they wanted to see, and I think they avoided a lot of what they didn't want to see in him as well. Was he perfect? Far from it, but they have full confidence that they selected the right guy with the third pick.
Well, I mean, there's clearly a lot of things that he's got to work on. I mean, the footwork's got to get better, the reads, the understanding of NFL defenses, the understanding of his own offense, exactly where to go with the ball. But, you know, there's one thing that you just get excited about, at least I do. And I showed this last night on Jaguars All Access. You know, when I went and watched the film and started watching the film as soon as we got on the airplane coming back from Houston, and you turn on that last drive where he's got the ball at the 15-yard line and the ability to win the game down by six, and then you look at every decision that he made going down the field. There was one of them that you would say, probably wasn't great, but it wasn't bad, and that was the one that he threw a little out route that the defender, I think, was able to get his hands on and knock the ball down.
Yes.
But you look at every other play that he had on that. He made the decision the way it should have been made on every single play. And he made it with pressure. And he made it to where you're talking about the ultimate crunch time on the road against the team in a playoff atmosphere game. And he's spot on. I mean, and that's the thing that I think that when you talk about the it factor with guys, you know, things that you can't coach, that's what you're looking for. You know, and the throw that he missed Clay Harbor on the crossing route, the inaccurate throw on third and short to Mercedes Lewis, to where they could have moved the chains and converted a third down, another third down to Allen Hearns that was a little bit off the mark to where Allen couldn't really do anything with the ball. I mean, those are things that I think the routine stuff that he's got to get better at. But the ability to have the moxie when it comes to crunch time, and it's not like the first time we ever saw it was Houston. 2-minute drills throughout the season. The New York Giants game comes to mind. The ability to raise your level of play when a team needs it, that's pretty special. And I mean, it excites me. It excites me, but also understanding there's a lot of work to be done.
If Cecil Shorts catches the football
right
on
his hand,
right? So if he catches that, are we having a, how different is the conversation this week and the
feeling?
They
win
that
game on first and 10. I mean, that's, you know, you're talking about, okay, on that play that we're talking about, that's the first and goal from the 10-yard line or 9-yard line, wherever it was from. And I think it was right at the 10. when he initially takes the snap, his side of the field that he's looking on is the right side of the field, and there's nothing. I mean, nothing there. And so he escapes up into the pocket and then almost parallel to the line of scrimmage to the left and is running to his left and throws it back to his right. And you could have 50 quarterbacks given that opportunity, and I guarantee you they don't make that throw as accurate as he did. That ball was put right on the money. And Cecil goes up in the air, which he really didn't need to, and jumps and tries to use his hands, but then here comes Marquise Lee. Marquise Lee is actually backing off. He doesn't even extend his hands. He knows that ball's going to Cecil. And Cecil, for whatever reason, turns his head just a little bit to look maybe at what Marquise was or whatever, anticipating contact. And I don't say it was alligator-armed, but the concentration wasn't there, but the ball was right where it needed to be. That should have been a touchdown and a victory in Houston.
It's so many things, it just seems like the simple plays, right? In that play, that's a complicated play for everything that's going on for Blake Bortles, right? You're reading one half of the field, it's not there. You decide to step up into the pocket, you're rolling left, you're throwing back to the right, you put it accurately on Cecil's hands. All that happens, you don't have time to process anything. Yet, when he stands there in a clean pocket, and he's got Clay Harbor, he can miss him as badly as he missed him. Meanwhile, the receivers, and I'm not saying that was an easy catch, but it is a catch I think you should make. Way too many easy, uncontested drops this year. What is it about some of these easy plays? Is it just youth? I think that becomes an excuse. These guys have played football. Marquise Lee didn't become the Biletnikoff Award winner by dropping as many passes as he did this Sunday. So what is
Well, he had drops in his career now. That was one thing that I pointed out all the way back going in the spring when I looked at Allen Robinson, I looked at Marquise Lee, was that, you know, I said at that time, I think Allen Robinson has the chance to be the better of the two, but Marquise has more explosiveness. But the reason I said that was because Marquise Lee showed some inconsistency at SC. And he had at times where he would drop the ball. And it kind of showed, you know, at Houston. I mean, he had, what, three drops in that ball game? You know, he easily could have had, you know, the five catches in which, you know, you would have had the first team in NFL history with three rookies with 40 catches or more. And that was disappointing on his part because I'm sure that he would have liked to have been able to have been a part of setting something that had never been done in the National Football League. But, you know, that's all part of youth. But at the same time, you can't accept it because it's youth. And so I think that in the offseason, that's going to be addressed. You know, I think the offensive side of the ball is going to be the area that free agency is addressed immediately in free agency. You're going to look at targeting tight end, wide receiver, offensive line, and free agency right away to make things more competitive. The more competitive things are within a roster, the better the results typically are. I mean, you've seen it with the Seattle Seahawks. When you get 10 guys playing up front on a defensive line and battling for playing time and the hot hand continues to get the reps, all of a sudden the play gets a little bit elevated. You know, and I know Gus Bradley talks about internally motivated guys and, you know, fighting for victory and striving for victory. I mean, and I totally believe in all that. But there's also external motivating factors.
That guy's coming for my job.
I mean, if somebody's coming to take my paycheck and take my job and my playing time, I'm going to elevate my level of play. And so I think those things are things that you can't do it in 2 years when you're rebuilding an NFL roster. It takes time. And I think that this year is going to be a significant jump as far as the motivation that comes from within a roster by making positions competitive.
All right. He is Jeff Logman along with Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. If you want to get in with Jeff today, and we usually know you do on a Tuesday, 641-1010 is the number. We'll take what calls we can. Here's the good news. Jeff is going to be with us all throughout the month of January as well, right up through the NFL playoffs, talking Jaguar football, talking playoff football, just NFL in general, everything that's happening around the National Football League. But today we've got a lot of sound from the locker room from yesterday. We're going to try to get to some of that. We've got Dave Caldwell's press conference coming up at the top of the next hour, so we're going to play you at least the first portion of that here live on the program. Want to discuss that. So if we have time, we'll get to some of your calls as well. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight today. I asked you probably one you could see coming a mile away. What was your favorite memory from the 2014 Jaguars season on the last Jaguars Today show of 2014? Share your thoughts with us, facebook.com/JaguarsToday. You can tweet us at MD underscore 1010XL, at Logs 56, L-O-G-S 56, and at 1010XL Fat Tony, and add at 1010XL Tyler to your go-to list of Twitter handles as well. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll hear from Blake Bortles and several of his teammates as they were gathered in the locker room, cleaning things out, getting ready for the offseason, trying to take a big step forward in 2015. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's a lot of fun. No matter what the record is this year, I still love the guys. We went to battle each and every day, each and every week. So, you know, you kind of just reflecting on everything and all the good memories.
Cecil Short says a lot of fun, regardless of the record. Well, hopefully Jaguar fans had fun this year. Winning is a big part of having fun.
Well, I think the exciting part is that, you know, even though you're If you kind of take a step away from trying to look at the performance overall as an offense and you look at it individually, that there are some pieces that are starting to fall in place for this team offensively that you do have reason to have hope, you know, offensively. You know, with the young offensive lineman, Brandon Linder was tremendous, and Bowanko has shown that he might be the best center draft pick that came out of the draft class, that you've got three young wide receivers that you think are going to be here for a very long time, and if you can supplement that in free agency with a veteran guy, you know, in Cecil Shorts, I think is not going to be here. You know, I think that if you go and you look at his body of work this year, his injury history, that I think it would be tough to say that he is going to be back. You know, when you can go out there and spend money, which you have to do as an organization to get a quality proven wide receiver, and maybe just make things a little bit different. You know, but you look at some of the games this year. The game in Houston, Cecil had a drop, you know, where he elevated on the sideline, only got 1 foot in, didn't have to jump. He jumps and tries to body catch it. It could have been a catchable ball with the hands. He had the fumble at Tennessee. He had a drop at Baltimore that would have been a key third down conversion. You know, I mean, so there's some plays that Cecil, you would have liked to have seen him make that he didn't make. And if you're going to have a veteran guy with a group of young players, you want guys that are going to make plays. And I think Cecil had a tough year. And the injuries history does not help.
No, I agree with you. I said it on the post game, was asked, who is the veteran most likely not to return? I think even he, more. I don't know about Mercedes, but I think Cecil would be my first answer.
Well, and as far as Mercedes goes, I mean, he, you look at the one play that he made against Tennessee to where it was a touchdown. Nice play, and I didn't like the throw that Blake had on that one because it should have been higher.
I agree with you.
It was kind of a cross between a back shoulder throw and then a jump ball.
Right,
but
wasn't
really
that right?
One
it just snuck over the shoulder of the defensive back. Yeah.
Whereas the throw at Houston on those four set of downs that they had at the end of the ball game, the one that he threw the ball to Mercedes was perfect.
Right.
And Mercedes couldn't elevate or didn't elevate. Now, there can be some dispute about whether or not the defender, number 26, and I'm going to look at his name here, Darryl Morris, was all over top of him. That really should have drawn a penalty. But at the same time, as a tight end, if you're going to be an elite tight end, and he's getting paid like an elite tight end, you've got to show or be a great actor to show that you're trying to elevate.
Yeah, fight.
But you can't do it because Darryl Morris is draped on top of
it. Pointed out, yeah.
But you didn't really see that. You know, and those are the kind of plays that Mercedes needs to be able to make. Now, how did he do as a blocker? Was he the dominant force that he was 3, 4, 5 years ago? No. He was good, but he wasn't the dominant force that he had been. And when your cap number is, you know, ballpark $10 million, that may be looked at and need some adjustment.
All right. Here's Jeff Logman. I'm Mike Dempsey along with Fat Tony. Let's go through some of these cuts yesterday from the locker room. Blake Bortles starting things off. First year in the books now. Talks about going into his first offseason as a member of the Jaguars.
It was good. It was a lot. You know, obviously, you know, the offseason coming up would be huge. You know, kind of take some time off right now. Get healthy. And then get after it. There's a lot of stuff to analyze, a lot of stuff to break down, a lot of stuff to get better at and improve. So, I mean, it's going to be an eventful offseason.
Big deal to go into the offseason, Jeff, knowing you're the guy, right?
Well, it's a big deal. The most importantly, the biggest deal for Blake Bortles was the experience that he had this year. Just getting the snaps, whether they're successful or not, but getting the exposure to understand what it's like to play an NFL season at the quarterback position. Because I remember when we had him sitting right here in the chair that, Tony, you're actually in right now, and I asked him, I said, you know, what about your expectations coming in? And he said, you know, I remember sitting on my couch and I used to be critical of those guys and sitting there saying, I can make that throw or do this and that. And you know, so it's an eye-opening experience because I know my rookie year and I wasn't playing quarterback, which is the hardest position to play in all of professional sports, that I was just overwhelmed with how different it was. And I remember when I got to the end of the year, it was the biggest deep breath maybe I've ever taken in my life. And I think that Blake needs to take a deep breath, get away from it for a little while, and then start to get to work. And then and that work we'll talk about, I think, some point here in the future, because very limited exposure that Blake Bortles can have with the coaching staff between now and when the CBA allows it.
Blake also talked about the expectations he has for 2015 already.
You know, I'd expect more consistency. More of, you know, things look the same, you know, on more occasions than not. And, you know, I think when that comes, you know, the consistency with accuracy and, you know, as well as many other things will come as well.
He'll talk more about the off season here coming up. Let's hear what he had to say. Jeff, you're just kind of alluding to it. When does the off season work begin? What is the timetable for Blake? It's not even January. We want to know. When are you getting back to work?
Immediately. I mean, you kind of, you know, I'll take a week off, go, you know, do something for New Year's with some friends, and then, you know, you come back and start, you know, slowly lifting and running and stuff. But I think you kind of stay on top of it mentally, you know, especially as a rookie quarterback going into your first offseason. You don't want to take a couple months off after not, you know, not paying attention to it or looking at it and forget it. So you want to stay involved in that and continue to learn it and really own the offense.
He knows himself. I mean, is that enough downtime in your mind? And he's not saying he's going to get out there with all his receivers in a week, but he's talking about let's keep the body up to where it needs to be and just let's not lapse. Let's just say, hey, we got an 8-week vacation coming up here.
Yeah. I mean, when you're a young player, you typically take a look, you know, and there's kind of two modes of thought here. You know, the older you are, the less time you want to take off because the more you have to be able to maintain your body to be able to compete at a high level. But when you're younger, you can take a little bit more time off. But for him, you got to take a little bit of time off, allow the body to heal, and then get back to work. And what I love most about his comments is that do you ever get the impression that he feels like he's there? No. It's a guy that totally understands and is realistic about where he's at and where he needs to be and what it's going to take to get there. And I think that's the most heartwarming thing as a Jaguars fan, I think, that you take from that. And that Blake Bortles has humility. He understands what his weaknesses are, and he understands that there's hard work to be done in order to get to where he needs to be.
Beats the season-ending press conference, Tony, where the rookie quarterback tells you, I need to start taking this thing more seriously.
Yeah,
right?
Like Johnny
Manziel.
Like
they had it up in Cleveland.
I mean, see, that's why, you know, and I know that they talked, maybe they would draft Johnny Manziel. There is no way in the world that this organization was going to draft Johnny Manziel. None. You cannot draft a franchise quarterback that has question marks in his background, a la Johnny Manziel. And I think the other one that you would question is Jameis Winston. Those type of players, absolutely not. You can't have the face of your franchise make questionable decisions. That can't happen.
And it doesn't seem like it feels like work to Blake either. It genuinely feels like he loves even the process of getting better, and he loves the game enough that having to go through an off-season of work isn't going to bother him all that much. Blake talked about trying to figure out the best approach to an off-season.
This off-season is kind of like a trial run in a sense of, you know, what am I going to do every off-season after this one? You know, kind of figure out the routine and what I'm going to do. So I'm going to do some different things. You know, obviously I'm going to be working out and running and, you know, paying attention mentally to our offense, but I'm going to try some different stuff and figure out, you know, what fits and what I like so I can go back to that every off-season. You know, reaching out, talking to other quarterbacks, seeing what they do.
And to me, that's unbelievable. I mean, the thirst for knowledge, the thirst to improve, the thirst for greatness. That's what he's talking about right there. And how you achieve that, he said, you know, he's talking about, hey, I'm going to try different things because there's not one thing, no cookie cutter thing that works for every quarterback. You have to find something that works for you and the person that works for you, whether it be a Jordan Palmer, who he worked with prior to the combine, whether it be the guy that Tom Brady goes and sees in California, whether it be the guy that, you know, Peyton Manning goes and sees at Duke. You know, whatever that is, find the groove and find the guy that you're comfortable with, much like Tiger Woods back when he had a guy that he used to be able to go to, and now all of a sudden I think he's kind of gone back to
Happy
him.
Happy birthday, Tiger.
Is it today's birthday?
Yeah.
How old is he?
39.
He's getting old.
I know. That means we are too.
Not me, brother.
No, not Loggy.
Not me, brother.
He's all good. And we all talk all the time about this franchise is going to rise and fall on the shoulders of number five to a large degree. And Blake talked about understanding that himself and how important his personal growth is to the success of this franchise.
I think that's the case in a lot of situations. You know, as the quarterback, usually if the quarterback plays well, the team does well. If not, you know, vice versa. So I think that's, you know, kind of, you know, how football is, you know, revolved around the quarterback. You know, so I think that's something that I understand and get and you know, is, you know, why I'll go and work so hard this offseason and try and, you know, get as, you know, much improved as I can.
Well, and there's a lot more to it than just him. There's other components of that offense that have to get better as well. You know, we talked last night on Jaguars Monday a little bit about what we called the Sharpie plays offensively, you know, the core beliefs of your offense that they really didn't seem to be able to identify, a set of Sharpie plays that Gus talked so much about during the bye week. And I think offensively going forward, you need to, as a staff, evaluate what number five does best and put him in those situations as often as you can to allow him to succeed, but then also to be able to take some of the pressure off him. An offensive line that has to get better and a running game that certainly has to get better.
Toby Gerhart, the Jaguars running back, certainly had a frustrating season for himself, but talked about, look, he feels like something good is coming for this football team.
This team is so close. You know, coming through the adversity and coming through the lows that we've had, I think it's going to make us stronger, make us better, and make us hungrier. We know what's coming, and, you know, a good thing is coming, and we're excited about that.
I mentioned that to Jessica. That's one thing that stood out. It was a theme with these guys, you know, that they feel like big things are on the horizon and not the distant future. Gerhart followed that up by saying something that I think a lot of Jaguar fans are starting to echo now. Okay, we get it. Young guys, that was your choice to go this way. Going into 2015, when wins are paramount, youth is no longer an excuse.
The youth of the team, you know, that's no longer an excuse. You know, that's, everybody's got a year under their belt, and now the expectations are raised that, you know, we need to go out there and execute and, you know, protect, you know, this culture that we have here.
What do you think?
Well, I mean, I do believe that the culture has been established here, but you definitely need to raise the bar. And when players start challenging themselves to get better, I think that that's where you want to be when you're a staff. But I also think that there are certain things that should have been done. Like, for example, Toby Gerhart this year, free agent acquisition from the Minnesota Vikings. I don't know if they necessarily utilized Toby the right way. Toby Gerhart is a lead and power running back, and they tried to put him into a zone type of scheme. And you always dabble, you always have a foundation of what you are. And I think that there's some questions about Toby Gerhart and what is the foundation that he needs to be in. Is he a starting back for this offense? And if so, is the offensive scheme right for him? When you watch Toby go straight ahead, you're talking about the pad levels going down. How many times do we go, man, that looks like Earl Campbell?
Right, it's a load. He carries guys 4 yards. Right.
Did you ever see him make a play like that on a zone play, a stretch play?
I can't. Honestly, I'm sure it happened. I can't remember him picking up positive yardage on a stretch
play.
Not really.
I mean, that's just, it's just not, that's not him.
Right.
You know, so I think also going forward is that the more that you learn about your players, when you have new players in such a young group, the more that you can really kind of hone what they do. What I talked about, these Sharpie plays, these core plays, but like finding what Blake Bortles does best. It's also finding about what Marquise Lee does best, what Allen Robinson does best, and what Toby Gerhart does best. That I put, you know, that coaches have to improve on that.
All right, more coming up from others such as Derek Marks, Jonathan Cyprian, Cecil Shorts. We want to keep on time here. Top of the hour coming up, Dave Caldwell's season-ending press conference, the Jacksonville Jaguar general manager. We'll air that live here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And then coming up at 1 o'clock today, Gus Bradley, same circumstance with him. We'll discuss what we expect to hear from those guys. And in the case of Dave Caldwell, we'll discuss what we actually do, as we'll hear that coming up now in less than 30 minutes. So that means coming up next, this state in football history, the Honda drive around the NFL. Your call is welcome at 641-1010. Jaguars Today continues on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date's football history brought to you by the best fence company in Jacksonville. I think Tony just gave me the look like, Does he know he's about to be on the radio? He gave me that look, Tony. That was a veteran who was in no hurry to get to the microphone.
That's right.
That was it's a pregnant pause because I have a lot to tell you. This date in football history, December 30th, 1995, Buffalo and Miami combined for a playoff record 1,038 yards as the Bills win 37-22 and run for 341 on the Miami defense on that day. This date in football history as well. Happy birthday, 1972. A bouncing baby named Kerry Collins came into the National Football League, and Jaguar fans obviously remember he was the guy that the Panthers started their franchise with. Jags go the Baselli route. I think it worked out, to a degree for both franchises. Certainly, people forget, I think, Jeff, Carolina was in the NFC Championship game in their second year,
right,
much like you guys were. So
yeah, they kind of did a little bit differently in that they were very heavy in free agency at that point. You know, Greg Lloyd, Kevin Green, I'm trying to remember some of the other names. Wesley Walls was a tight end for them.
Who's a little short linebacker?
Sam Mills.
He was there at that
time,
right?
Sam Mills, who is deceased now.
Yeah.
The late Sam Mills, who was a great guy, great player. I believe he was undrafted guy, New Orleans Saints originally, and then finished his career at Carolina Panthers, and then have a statue of him. He fought a battle with, I believe it was cancer or something of that nature, and then passed away, but a great role model for a lot of people in Carolina.
Do you think the fan base, did you guys consider them a rivalry just because they came into the league with you at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, I think early on it was.
Measuring
because,
stick?
Yeah, it was the measuring stick, and, you know, you obviously two franchises. You know, starting at the same time and, you know, two different philosophies. You know, you had one philosophy is that, you know, draft and young, and the other one was draft but supplement with the older guys, and Dom Capers had his scheme, different defensive scheme, you know, defensive coach, offensive coach, what was the way to do it? You know, so absolutely. I mean, even the Hall of Fame game, which, gosh, I'd like to forget that one because I just remember that playing in that game feeling like I had just been through the Bataan Death March. I mean, not to compare training camp to, you
sure.
know, what real war veterans went through, but what Tom Coughlin put us through up there at Stevens Point in 1995 was certainly a thing of legend. And yes. then to go out there for
and
the first
hey,
game of the
let's
year.
Let's go play.
You're like,
right.
Yeah, man, we get to go play game day. God's awesome, man. We're not going to get as many reps today.
Yeah, right. Right, exactly. Hey, and isn't that great? We get an extra preseason game as well, which I guess in that case, as you just pointed out, was kind of a break for you guys. This date in football history brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Give them a call at 268-1638. The next time you're in the market for a fence for your home or your place of business, you get a professional free estimate. You can also visit Best Fence Jacks. JAX.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Southern Cal junior defensive end Leonard Williams has informed the team that he is going to enter the NFL draft. Williams is expected to be a top five pick.
What number is he going to wear here?
We'll see. Could be a strong consideration for the Jags at number three. According to some draft quote-unquote experts, Williams could wind up being the number one prospect in this draft overall. Nebraska defensive end Randy Gregory has also announced that he will enter the NFL draft. Baylor's Sean Oakman, the 6'9", 280-pound defensive end, has said that he will return to Baylor for his senior year. The Detroit Lions lost more than just the division crown in a home playoff game and potentially a bye week in the NFC playoffs on Sunday with their loss to the Green Bay Packers. Lions defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh has been suspended for their playoff game against the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday after he stepped on the ankle of Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Suh is appealing that suspension. And the Pittsburgh Steelers are bringing in Ben Tate to work out for the team today at running back. Starting running back Le'Veon Bell's availability for the Steelers' wild card weekend game against Baltimore is up in the air after suffering a hyperextended knee on Sunday night. The Steelers' current depth chart at running back without Bell would be Dree Archer and Josh Harris. Both players are rookies. They have combined for 19 attempts on the season.
And Harris was really the guy they went to more on the base kind of stuff. I think Dree Archer is so small, man, that he's more of a kind of a specialist. But
he's A. Sanders.
That's you about know? What he is, right, size-wise. A couple of interesting things. One, so I see that you're right. In many a mock draft where they'll have Mariota and Winston, say, going one and two, they'll get to Leonard Williams. Top player on the board. And obviously quarterbacks get elevated during the draft process, but already some people with their preliminary grades like Leonard Williams as much as or more than any prospect out there.
Yeah, but there's a whole process that's got to be gone through.
But Jeff,
we have to
start somewhere.
Yeah, I know, but you know,
when do you start watching guys for the draft, Jeff?
Probably about March.
Okay.
March, you know, beginning of April, I'll start watching some of these college prospects. You know, it takes a while also for the video department to be able to compile, you know, the video footage of these guys to where I would have that ability to watch it too. You know, but you know, it's to be able to rank these guys right now, I think is way too early. Most of it's all media generated. And obviously the sexy part of that is quarterback, much like at this point last year, Johnny Manziel was talked about to be, you know, a top five pick, you know, when in reality that wasn't the case. You know, it's going to take some more time to figure that out. And who would have thought that Blake Bortles was going to be, you know, a top five pick at this stage of the,
sure,
of the draft evaluation? Nobody knew that. You know, now eventually he ended up there and rightfully so because he was one of the top quarterback prospects, but it takes time to be able to find out what is real and what is just media driven.
Then again, Tony and I have about 5 months to go, and we will hang on every mock draft and every value board change between now
and the draft. What you hope is that there are two quarterbacks at the top of that draft, because you know your chances of one team not liking one of those quarterbacks is good. And that, you know, that quarterback could fall to the three spot, which could be a valuable trade option for this football team.
I think that's ideal. I really do think that's ideal. I think most people think it's almost a mortal lock that the Buccaneers take a quarterback, whatever their quarterback of choice turns out to be. And
I made this bet with Phil Sims when he was here for the Thursday night game. He told me that Jameis Winston's top pick. And I told Phil, I said, I'll bet you dinner. Anywhere your choice.
He won't be
a top five pick.
You don't think he'll be a top five pick?
No way.
Then you got no chance to have somebody trade. Because if Mariota goes number one, that's the guy they're going to be trading up for, right? So, mm-hmm. So you don't think then there'll be a trade market?
I don't think that Jameis, well, I mean, now I don't know about any of the other quarterbacks that are going to be there.
Right. Well, based on what we know now, and you're right, we don't know everything. Like you said, Blake Bortles wasn't being talked about in that regard at this time. But if the board were to hold somewhat steady, and I understand the process, we go through it every year. Winston is the most likely guy. I don't think, you know, if you're, for instance, the Raiders, they may feel like Derek Carr is good enough. New head coach may want to go in a completely opposite direction, mm-hmm. or, you know, new regime. The Jets, are they going to get buffaloed in believing what they saw from Geno Smith in week 17? Or are they going to say, you know what, we got to get this guy and we got to start off, the defense has been good. We got to get that franchise quarterback. Those are the teams I think you're looking at. But the feeling right now, and it's way early, it's still December for goodness sakes, is that Tennessee is not going to draft one that high. That's at least the early pulse of the situation. I don't know if anybody has a good idea into the mind of what their front office is thinking, but that at least Mettenberger will be given a chance to compete for the job, and they may bring in a couple of guys to push him or compete outright and maybe take that spot, but it won't necessarily be a top two pick, in which case that guy's practically anointed as your guy today's day and age.
But Ken Wisenhunt has a track record of bringing in veteran guys. You know, he wants a guy that can come in, and then you know, you've already got a young guy that I think that they feel pretty good about, Zach Mettenberger.
Yeah.
You know, so would not be surprised if they go and they get a veteran guy, but who?
But well, at the same, well, that's the question. It's always the question when you're going to get a veteran guy.
And Leonard Williams may not be available to you. I mean, that's the kind of talk that's around Leonard. I've watched him play two games, and that's obviously not watching tape or anything, but he's just a bully. I mean, on the college football field, he just throws offensive linemen around like they're rag dolls. Now, can he do that in the NFL? Probably not, but he is, that's the best word for him, a bully on the college field.
Now, if the Bears get a head coach like Mike Shanahan, obviously they're going to keep Jay Cutler. If they explore the possibility of trading him, I mean, he played college football in Nashville. Some people have made that connection. Houston's a possibility maybe to be in the market for him as well. But that's one direction if you're going to go the veteran quarterback direction. But I think Tony's right. Either Tennessee could stay there, take the Jags player, whoever that turns out to be, or they could be the ones that benefit, and they may say, you know what, we'll trade down to five and come on up and jump up into this slot if you want the QB. We're the ones you need to do business with. By the way, listening to the Tony's telling the story about Ndamukong Suh getting suspended, I'm sure you're shaking your head internally saying, yeah, this is what has happened to my man filled NFL. We've watered it down.
I thought it was kind of harmless. I mean, you know, the first step was purely accidental. The second one was, uh-oh, there he is again. Well, let me just let him know I was here.
And let me lift my right foot off the ground and put my 330 pounds of weight onto his injured calf.
But he didn't jump on it when he lifted his one foot up, you know, so.
Okay. All right. I think you're in the minority on.
This is going to be very interesting now.
The appeal?
Yes. Because, yeah. I mean, Teddy Cottrell's the one that's going to end up hearing the appeal. And Teddy Cottrell is a defensive coach who has been around the league for a very long time. You know, and Teddy's the one that also overturned the suspension of, I believe it was Ed Reed, a couple years ago. So, that will be interesting to watch. I think that if you suspend him for a game, make it for a regular season game. Don't make it for the playoffs. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's too much.
I think he's making like 10 times less in the postseason game as opposed to a regular season.
No, so it costs him less money, but it's much more important. Nobody wants to give up.
The worst thing about suspending a player for the playoffs is that you're penalizing his team. You know, I mean, you're penalizing his teammates. You know, so I mean, if you want to make it hurt, absolutely. That's the one.
If I commit a crime, you send me to jail. You're penalizing my family too because I'm not there to earn money for them. That's tough, buddy.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers, come on. I mean, he didn't get hurt. He was okay.
Is that the judge, though, on whether or not somebody gets hurt? Like, if I, you know, I fire a gun at you, I happen to miss. You know, I didn't hit him, so it's okay.
Because here's the thing. If it wasn't Ndamukong Suh and it wasn't Aaron Rodgers, would this even be a conversation?
But Ndamukong Suh, it's a conversation.
Let's say it's Avery Jones and the Jaguars are playing the Tennessee Titans and Avery Jones does this, okay, to Ryan Fitzpatrick or the Texans.
I got you.
You know what I mean?
Maybe it's not, but that's part of the look, it's not like it's just because he's a high profile player. He's a high profile player has a list of questionable tactics.
See, that's good stuff, though, man.
To you, it is. I don't think stepping on Aaron Rodgers is good stuff.
It's rivalry. Well, it's division stuff. Yeah, it's all good things.
Deal with the consequences. You're a grown man.
It's like Brett Favre and Warren Sapp. And Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Rodgers. You love it.
All right. You love it. I don't love Ndamukong Suh. I don't love that aspect of it. The guy is a wrecking ball. Tony talks about a bully. I've never seen a college performance like the one I saw in the Gator Bowl with Ndamukong Suh playing here for Nebraska.
Maybe the greatest bully ever in college football.
The guy was unbelievable, Jeff. Two guys on him, and he, at times, literally was picking offensive linemen up and throwing them out of the way to get after the quarterback. It was extremely impressive. But
I always said this about Ndamukong Suh. Maybe physically, I mean, not in the same category of Reggie White, because Reggie White was the strongest human being that I've ever watched play football, bar none. But if Ndamukong Suh, like Reggie White, learned some technique and some pass rush moves and the little subtleties of playing the defensive line position, he would be so much better. But he's one of those guys that always, you know, was big and strong his whole life.
Could get by on that.
And could get by and dominate. And it was always good enough. And he never really took it to another level. And that's the one thing that's been disappointing about Ndamukong Suh is you never started to see the little subtleties and nuances of playing that position start to show up to where he could elevate his game even higher.
All right, let's take a quick break here. That was this date in football history and the Honda Drive around the NFL. Coming back, we're going to let you hear Dave Caldwell's press conference to wrap up the season. That'll be live on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you another moment or two. And we'll go live to Dave Caldwell at his season-ending press conference. Today I see a number of the Jaguars Today regulars in there on the video feed on Jaguars.com. And our coverage will come to you courtesy of our friends at Jaguars.com. I see Mark Long in there chewing that gum. I see Ryan O'Halloran. Hasn't grown any hair since we saw him last. And I'm sure Osier is in there somewhere. There's the easily recognizable Vito Stellino.
Vito!
Well. You can never have enough of Vito. So it's all happening right now at Jaguars.com, and it'll all be happening on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Jeff, what do you want to hear Dave Caldwell most address in this press conference?
I want to hear what most fans want to hear is, you know, what is your plan for the off season? You know, how do you expect to be able to make this roster more competitive? Because, I mean, that is Dave's responsibility number one. You know, what's your plan in free agency? What's your plan with some of these guys on this football team whose contracts are up? You know, namely a Tyson Alualu, a JT Thomas, a Geno Hayes. Is Paul Posluszny and Mercedes Lewis, are they guys that will be subject to, you know, maybe taking pay cuts or you know, what's the status of them? You know, where do you, and most importantly, where do you feel where your young quarterback is at? Because, you know, Dave was the guy that drafted him, obviously with a lot of input from Gus and the coaching staff and the scouting staff, but to evaluate where your quarterback is at, you know, where the cap is at, you know, what's your situation with the cap? You know, what kind of room do you have? What's the available money that you are going to be able to spend? And, you know, he's got to be limited on a lot of comments that he can make as far as, you know, targeted free agents. Because, I mean, they're under contract with another team.
And you don't want to give out the game plan.
No.
I'm kidding with Jessica Blaylock. I'm telling her, I want you to come back for this press conference. I want you to tell me exactly who he's signing in free agency. He's not going to give that away.
You know, the more important press conference that Dave Caldwell would have would be something that he would talk about when you get closer to the draft. And I understand that he's, you know, going to have a poker face and all of that. But to be able to talk to him about free agency when you get to that point, because there's still free agency evaluation to be made from their scouting staff and the coaching department. So there's a lot of stuff that has to happen there. So to me, the press conference that I want to hear today is Gus Bradley's. The one that I want to hear pre-free agency and draft is I want to hear from Dave Caldwell.
Tony, what about you for today?
You know, I do want to hear a little bit about the offensive side of the ball and maybe after evaluating the things with the season being over now, why are they struggling the way they're struggling? I know a lot of the fans are questioning whether or not Jed Fish should be back. I do think that Caldwell has to at least address those kind of issues.
Does he address that, or is that the coach's
place? That's Gus's
place.
That's Gus's place to
Gus
do
and
that.
Him. Okay.
To deal with that.
And the way you have your flow chart set up, I mean, you know, Gus falls under Dave, but then the staff falls under Gus.
Okay. Yeah, but the offensive side of the ball is what's bothering me, and that kind of goes to what you were saying, Jeff, with what is the plan for the offseason, what is available to them as they get going. I mean, look, free agency doesn't start till March, so we have 3 months to have this conversation about what the plan is going to be for this team going forward.
And what's the date of free agency starting
21st,
exactly?
I believe. Okay. March 21st. But it is going to be interesting to hear from the general manager about, like you said, how he feels his young quarterback played.
All right, guys, let's go live down the hallway. Dave Caldwell coming up to the podium. Let's get into it. Jaguar general manager.
I will give you the date. I'm almost positive it's April 20th. I'll check it. Paul Posluszny, same thing. Should be back for the start of off-season conditioning program. Alan Ball is improving, not 100% right now. Austin Pastore is progressing well. He's still on crutches, no setbacks, and right now he's kind of concentrating on his upper body strength. Allen Robinson, he will be doing his rehab here. He's controlling, right now they're controlling his weight-bearing activity. So he's still got a ways to go. And you got the information on Derek Martz, and then Roy Miller will have his procedure tomorrow. Turn it over to Dave.
Hi. Sorry to make you guys wait a day after the season to do this, but glad it's here and glad to see you all for hopefully the last time for a while. Which one's D-Rocks? Let me turn that off. No. Just looking at our season in review, I think, you know, for the most part, I want to thank our fans for one, in terms of their undying support for our team and for our organization and their passion and their commitment. We can't do this without them, and we appreciate their patience and their frustrations, and I understand it. We get it, and you know, we feel like that this season was very challenging for the most part because of our decision to go young. And as we said before, it wasn't an excuse. We've had 82 rookie starts, which I believe is the most in the NFL by a large margin. And if you factor in guys like Talvin Smith and Aaron Colvin when they played, you know, they played starter reps but didn't necessarily start games. So it was probably a little bit more than that. But I got to give a lot of credit to our coaching staff. I've said this before. I think over the last 2 years, Coach Bradley, and not to diminish any other coaches in the NFL, but has probably had the most challenging job out of anybody in the NFL in terms of our roster turnover, in terms of our youth. To play that many rookies, to make a commitment to develop young players is kind of unheard of in this league. And Coach Bradley is at the forefront of doing it, and because we're doing it the way we believe from day one. And we're doing it because we have a tremendous owner, Shad Khan, who's believes in our vision, believes in our process of how we want to build this and continue to build this team. And I think we're probably right on par for where we thought we would be at this point in time. So with that being said, I'll open up to any questions you guys have. I wouldn't say I'm completely surprised, no. I think this season kind of went I thought we would have the opportunity to win maybe somewhere between 4 and 7 wins this year. And I think we had that. We didn't capitalize on some of those opportunities. And, you know, in the NFL, it's a highly competitive league. And but, you know, I'm proud of the way our players played and competed to the last second. Yeah, I think, you know, looking back over the two-year period, our first year was we wanted to find a culture of what we wanted to build here. And Coach Bradley and his staff has done a great job doing that. This going into this past season, we wanted to identify a core of players that are going to be here for a long period of time. We feel like we've done that. And going into next year, I think it's about making a difference. It's about making a difference on our roster. It's about making a difference and the outcome of games. So,
where do you see the roster, the biggest need going forward?
Well, you know, Coach Bradley's been tied up with the coaching staff for the last 48 hours since the last game. He and I, you know, talk periodically, but I think this is more of season in review. Going forward, we're going to address every position. And, you know, as you guys know, we're gonna compete to put the best roster out there.
How much guidance will you give Gus when it comes to potential staff?
You know, those are coaches' decisions. I firmly believe with the coaches as the kind of like the CEO of the coaches and the players. He'll ask my guidance. He'll ask my opinion. But I try not to get too involved in that because Gus is really the expert in X's and O's, and our staff is the expert in X's and O's. I may ask some tough questions. We may have some tough conversations. But at the end of the day, that's Gus's decision. Well, that's a good question. Defensively, I think all year they played really solid football, what I would consider playoff caliber football, especially on third down. And our defensive line, they have 45 sacks, 6 in the NFL with an offense that really hasn't produced and put them in position to sack the quarterback has been great. I think it's been the most sacks here since, 2005. And, you know, we have to play good defense and we have to be able to run the ball were the two things that we wanted to focus on this year. The secondary, the young secondary, D-Mac, Aaron Colvin, Sip, I think those guys played well. They had some inconsistencies at times early in the year, but really settled down the last, you know, 8 to 9 games. And then young guys like Telvin Smith, you know, he's averaged he had the most tackles over the last 2 weeks of anybody in the NFL, and he's averaged a little over 10 tackles since he started. So that was really good. And then offensively, we knew it would be a tough season. We knew that we'd have 9 of 11 new starters. And I feel like defense is probably where we made our most gains this year. Yeah, I think it worked out really well for him. You know, I give him a ton of credit. He, you know, you guys see him on the injury report on a weekly basis. He's taken plenty of hits that you guys have documented every game that I see. And he, you know, the kid's just he's got a heart that's unmatched, and his competitive desire to win and to compete is really good. But, you know, the experience that he's going to draw from playing these 14 games is going to be great for him next year. He's not going to see things for the first time next year. Everything he sees is going to be, you know, probably for the second time, which has been great.
When you look at your roster at the end of year two, are you where you thought you'd be there with as many young guys still in the league?
Yeah, and really optimistic about it, too. I actually feel better than probably what our record indicates in terms of where the roster is right now. We can go into this draft and not have to draft a player to come in and start right away. That was not the situation in the last 2 years. We've had little margin for error. You know, when you talk about starting seventh round corner, sixth round safeties, sixth round center, third round guards, and coming in undrafted free agent wide receiver, that's not an ideal situation. Fifth round linebacker. Ideally, you want to get to a point in time where your roster is, you know, your first round pick's playing, hopefully right away. Your second round pick may start to play somewhere during the season. And then as the year goes, you know, maybe you have injuries and guys start to play. But the way we've did it has been a little unconventional, and just feel like that we feel good about it. And the experience these guys have got, now they have to get better, and we have to get better as a team. And it has to result in better outcomes of games.
And finally, Archie turns to him and says, "Son, the best thing about your rookie year is that it ends. And now the game will slow down for you and you'll be fine." Why
yeah.
are you confident that that will happen, both for your quarterback and for this young roster that saw so much play?
Sure. Well, I feel like it did towards the end of the year with Blake. And you saw him cut down dramatically on some of the mistakes that he made early in the year. And I think for Blake, it's been a good balance of cutting down on the mistakes, but still trying to be aggressive. And that's what we really wanted him to do. We, you know, some of the interceptions I didn't care about. You know, some of the ones where he's trying to make a play, because I think next year or the year after, those might turn into touchdowns. And you don't want to take that out of him. But I think for the most part, his ability to start to identify different protections and things like that has really slowed down for him. And he's really got to a point later in the year where, you know, he felt comfortable that he knew the offense inside and out. And that was a good thing.
You're listening to Jaguar General Manager Dave Caldwell here live on 1010XL.
I don't think it's very difficult. I think our offensive line needs to be addressed. I think how we, you know, some of the things that we do with them probably needs to be addressed. But I think for the most part, I think we feel good about our center position, our right guard position, our left tackle. And then the other two positions, you know, they're going to get better by just playing another year, another offseason. Luke Jokel spent 9 months rehabbing. He didn't spend 9 months getting better last year. This will be an offseason where he can spend 9 months getting better. Brandon Linder, Luke Bawenko, those guys have a pretty good plan to come in. Zane Beatles, I know, you know, early on the season was a little inconsistent, but really settled down the last part of the season. And, you know, people forget that it was his first year in this offense, too. He spent 4 years in a different offense, comes in. Just because you're a veteran doesn't mean you know all the intricacies of a different offense either. So I think we need to add some competition there. We need to add some depth, and we'll see where it takes us. For everybody, yeah, everybody. You know, that's our central theme of our organizations. We're gonna compete to put the best 22 players out there. Just, you know, some of the things in terms of our zone blocking scheme. I think what our coaches did a nice job is, as you saw halfway through the year, that the run game really started to take off. And we had some games where we ran the ball really well, and using those guys to their strengths. And we all look at the sacks and the sacks we gave up, but we did a pretty good job running the ball later in the year. You know, Gus has been in contact with him. We've texted back and forth. I know it's his plan to come back. We'll see where it takes us. You know, we're taking it day by day, and we're just thinking and praying for George.
At some point, do you have to make a decision whether you have to hire?
No.
The injuries to Morris and Miller, does that affect how you view your strength at that position?
No. You know, Ziggy Hood, we signed last year and played good football for us this year. So if we had to start the season with him at Senderic's spot, we feel good about that. Avery Jones is another one. So, Todd Wash, our defensive line coach, said, you know, kind of, you know, with those two guys going down and having off-season knee surgery is a bad thing. The good thing is we have two really good backups. And so, you know, we'll have to address it and see where we're at. Hopefully we'll have him back for the beginning of the season. Senderic will be pretty close. Roy should be ready for the off season, and we'll see where it goes.
What'd you take away from the three rookie receivers?
They're highly competitive. They're great kids. It means something to all of them. I mean, they can't wait to get back to start training and compete. And they're all pretty talented.
What do you make of Bortles' pitches for maybe not making the routine plays?
per game and then really stepping up in two-minute drill and late games crunch time?
Yeah, I think it's a great thing. And, you know, obviously a lot of these games in the NFL are won in the last and lost in the last 2 minutes of a game. And if he can be composed during those last 2 minutes, that's great. I think, you know, some of the routine stuff, though, that will come. That will come with experience. That will come with, you know, just with him having a better knowledge that he can see a guy on a crossing route and realize that he's going to be there and he doesn't have to rush a throw, that the pass protection is going to be there. So I think, you know, some of the, to his question earlier, once it starts to slow down, a lot of those routine throws and plays will become second nature.
Is he playing a little late in the year, maybe a little looking at the rush?
I didn't notice that too much. I think his clock was pretty much on time. I think, you know, and some of the stuff we may have told him is, hey, you know, look at your first read. If it's a quick game type of thing, you know, they're going to be coming because, you know, we're cut blocking, so be aware. And I think for the most part, he stood up there, you know, on that fourth and ten, he stood up in the pocket and hit Cecil in the last, you know, last drive of the game last week. So I think he's always keeping his eyes downfield.
Around draft time, you said Justin Blackman field comes back in there. What are you seeing now, 7-8 months later, on that topic? And
the same thing. You know, we hope for him. We pray for him. Our thoughts are with him. We hope he comes back because we know he's talented, but we know he's also a good person that's fighting a tough battle. But I think you're right. I think we have to treat it as a luxury. I don't, you know, if he comes back, that's great. If he doesn't, you know, we can't count on what we feel good about the three guys we got. And if he comes back, that's even better.
We feel like we've heard some good momentum. Are you guys hearing?
Yeah, I've hearing some good things, and, you know, we haven't been in contact with him, but just from some of his people have relayed some messages that he's really kind of dedicating himself to being healthier and coming back. So we'll see.
Why would you
want
that? He's let you down a couple of times, and now you're
with
the basis of three other receivers.
Yeah.
Can you consider that
No, he does.
Well, it's not, you know, his number, if he comes back, is 4 or 5?
No.
What is
because it tolls from last year.
What would that be?
I think it's 1.7.
Money aside, why would you want
him? Well, there's no risk for him. If he comes back and he's a luxury, that, you know, that's great for us. There's no downside to it. Do you see a downside to it?
I do see a downside. Is you guys talk about creating the culture here and telling the truth and.
Yeah, I think there's some issues that may have not allowed him to do that, that we're trying to stand by him and trying to get him where he can do that and be that type of person that we strive to be. Not everybody's perfect, and we said that from the beginning. We're not going to have 53 angelic players. We're going to have some guys with issues. And at the end of the day, if they're willing and to do the right things and show remorse, we're not going to be the ones to judge them for that. I'm hoping by the time the draft rolls around, so we can plan accordingly.
Kind of staying with that theme of angelic players, how do you take that approach into free agency with some guys that may have had issues with other players?
I think for the biggest thing is, you know, we have to identify what we can tolerate here and what is acceptable for us. And then we want guys that are good in the locker room, that are competitive, that really love football. If they have some issues off the field, we want to make sure they're not a menace to society and that they're not going to be a headache and they're not going to be a distraction. But we also want players that are productive in the community. And so if we can find players that can do a lot of those things, you know, we'll have to, you know, weigh the risk reward on them.
If you have a lot of money to spend, is this the year you spend it?
Well, we'll see. We'll see what's available. You know, with the salary cap potentially going up, there are the rumors of it going up. You know, teams are going to be able to afford, you know, some of the players that we think are going to hit the market. Our plan was for year three to, you know, infiltrate or bring some, not infiltrate, but bring some free agents in. And we'll see where it's at. We'll see, you know, if we can find some good opportunities.
Which side of the ball are there strengths for free agency and the
draft? Well, offensive side of the ball, you know, there's some good wide receivers that are free agents this year. And, you know, defensively, interior defensive linemen.
What are your expectations for this offense that has averaged 15 points a game for the last 4 years?
For it to average more than 15 points a game. Well, we'll see what we do in the offseason. You know,
do you
a lot.
Have to spend,
we don't have to spend on that this year. We have to 2017. So in 2017, this past draft class is going to be able to be renewed. So we can see where we're at. But our plan is to, I mean, if we spend 95% of the cap over the next 2 years, we'll hit our target. So we don't necessarily have to spend, you know, a ton of money. But our plan, our owner is incredible. He will do, you know, our option not to spend over the last couple of years, that's been my decision. You know, that, you know, he comes in on a daily basis and asks us every day, can I do anything for you? Do you need anything? Is there anything we can do? And, you know, so it was, you know, my decision not to spend over the last 2 years. You know, he's been there. Anything that we've ever asked for, when we went for Alex Mack last year, you know, he was all for it. He will do whatever he can to create a winner here, and it's my job to help him do that.
Dave Caldwell, Jaguar General Manager. We got to take a timeout. The press conference continues on Jaguars.com, and certainly if you're following along on Twitter with all the assembled Jaguar media, they're all tweeting out, I'm sure, all the latest on that. We'll have some thoughts on this coming back. We'll see. For all we know, Dave Caldwell will still be going. He is one cool customer, let me tell you that, as we observe him taking in this press conference here, and glad we could bring that to you here. Back with more coverage right here on Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars Today continues on this Tuesday in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggum, and Fat Tony here with you as the press conference still ongoing, right, Tony? Still rolling on.
Yeah, they're still going.
And that's on Jaguars.com. We carried that for about 15 minutes, wanted you to hear some of those thoughts. And if you're following Jaguar Twitter at all, there's all kinds of nuggets coming out. First, let's mention a couple of things that didn't air on our airwaves here. One being that, Tony, you said that Dave Caldwell said what in regards to expectations for how many wins they'd have in the first 2 years?
He said that they probably won more than he expected them to over the course of the first 2 years. Now, he did clarify on that they probably won more last year than he expected him to. I think everyone in that building kind of expected it to be a one or two win season with the direction that they took it, and that he felt like they won less this year than they should have. But overall, probably.
But I also don't think he expected them to be so young.
Right.
Right.
And
he talked about that too. Right.
Yeah.
And J.P. Shadrick tweeting out, in hindsight, we should have had some more veteran presence this year. In other words, he wanted to go young. He probably took it too far, and he recognizes that they went maybe to an extreme.
I've said it before. I mean, what they've done this year offensively, that's never been done before in the National Football League. I mean, you go back and you look at all the expansion teams in NFL history, it just has not been done. You know, so where do you gauge, where do you find an apple to compare an apple to in this evaluation of this offense? It's nearly impossible to do. So you knew it was going to be tough, especially when you've got the main position being so young, and that's the quarterback.
Also, Big Cat Country tweeting out that Dave Caldwell said that the team will find out today whether or not they get to coach this year's Senior Bowl, that they would be happy to do it, would look forward
to it.
Well,
I hope they don't, just because, you know, and look, and I know there's great benefit to being able to coach the Senior Bowl, because you can really get an up-close and personal look at some of the guys that you potentially could draft, and they draft a lot of guys that have participated in the Senior Bowl. You know, and there's nothing better than being able to be in a meeting room and spend time with a guy, you know, on that type of circumstance for almost an entire week. But at the same time, after, you know, you look at last year and you look at this year. Last year you had a West Coast trip that went from Oakland to Seattle and then London. And then this year, and then after last season, you had the Senior Bowl. And then this year you also had, you know, another trip to London. I would like to see this staff just catch a break, and then be able to catch their breath to recharge their batteries. Because after 2 years, you know, seven wins combined, you know, sometimes stepping away can be a good thing.
Hey, suck it up, staff, and go to the Senior Bowl. I disagree with Loggy on this one. Sorry, Logs. You are. We love Logs because he's got his own opinion. You're the first guy I've heard that said you think it would be more of a net positive to not go coach a Senior Bowl.
Because I think that sometimes when you do something and you put so much energy into it, and it can be extremely frustrating and challenging, you know, coaches need to recharge at some point. You know, I mean, these guys grind all year long. You can still go to the Senior Bowl and to be able to watch and evaluate the film. I mean, there's still benefits to be in there, but to not have, you know, the time away from, hey, look, I want to see Gus and I want to see, you know, the coaching staff, you know, Bob Babich and, you know, everybody to be able to go and spend time at home with their wives, you know, spend time with their family sometimes. I mean, you know, look, you feel for these guys because of the challenges they've had.
A couple of just some composite tweets here from the likes of John Osier, Brent Martineau, Vito Stellino, Ryan O'Halloran, all tweeting, and a lot of them tweeting the same quotes here, so not to not recognize any of them. Jaguar general manager Dave Caldwell saying he likes how Jonathan Cyprian has developed and played. Dwayne Grotz, he felt settled down over the last eight games of the season. Let's see, also high on Cyprian, not as down on Jokel as a lot of folks are. Ace Sanders has not been as explosive as a punt returner as we thought. I think these are things we either were common sense, such as in the case of Ace Sanders, or you pretty much had a good idea, being in this building, Jeff, how they felt about Jokel, for instance. And they continue to say they feel good about this, the future of Jonathan Cyprian. And again, this week, a couple of bad missed tackles in this game, I thought, for Jonathan Cyprian. But he also made some nice plays, made a nice tackle for loss coming up with a decisive
third down stop.
Right, stop mm-hmm. behind the line. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's
good
all
and
bad, but it wasn't this big leap forward in year two that a lot of people were expecting.
I'm gonna stick with what I said about Jonathan Cyprian, what was it, 5-6 weeks ago? I think it was right after we were talking about the game in London against the Dallas Cowboys. You know, he needs to take a step up in awareness. You know, if he can take a step up in awareness and anticipate things more so, then I think, and I'm not saying that he's not a student of the game, but one of the things that I think happens when Dave Caldwell talks about he wishes that he hadn't gone so young in certain areas, you know, that secondary has been young from the get-go. You know, Alan Ball, really the lone exception with Will Blackman. But to be able to have some more, and I think that the defensive backs coach is an outstanding coach that they have. But to be able to learn the game above and beyond just learning the X's and O's of a game plan are something that's priceless. I mean, I remember, you know, I had the great fortune to be able to watch game film with Ronnie Lott. And Ronnie taught me so much more about the game because, you know, instead of watching individuals, he's talking about, you know, route combinations and tendencies with coaches, et cetera, and those are things that you don't necessarily get from a coach at times, like the Dwayne Walker, who, like I said, is a very good coach. You know, so, but he's got to take that next step up in awareness. And it was interesting to me when Dave Caldwell was talking about the offensive line. He pinpointed Luke Bowanko, Brandon Linder, the center and right guard, and he also talked about Luke Jokel being building blocks for the future, but did not mention Zane Beatles. And that's a guy that I said early in the season was just not good. And then he got better. But, you know, even in this past game where J.J. Watt got the sack on the safety, that's a slide protection. A slide protection that Luke Jokel was expecting inside help for Zane Beatles to be there. When J.J. Watt spun to the inside, Zane Beatles should have hit him in his mouth. And he should not have had that sack for safety. Just an example.
Right, what about the one where he ended up beating Gerhardt? I don't know if you can expect.
I have an issue with the game plan on that.
Because Luke Jokel's just standing there in space looking for somebody to hit.
No, but he's blocking down on the defensive end in that situation. That's not on Luke. That's play design. And I made mention of this in Baltimore when Storm Johnson had the responsibility of blocking Terrell Suggs, T. Sizzle. And that's a three-step game. You expect the quarterback to get the ball out in a timely fashion on that. So, yes, it's on the quarterback, but at the same time, if things break down, I don't want to have Storm Johnson blocking T. Sizzle. And I don't want to have Toby Gerhardt blocking the best defensive player in football in J.J. Watt.
That's your favorite nickname in the league because every Love time it. You bring up Suggs, you call him T. Sizzle.
That's right.
That's
not
awesome.
Ball So Hard University.
That's right. That's where he's from, Ball So Hard University.
Love that guy.
We'll take a time out here. We'll come back. Some more observations as we're sitting here and we're all making notes and checking off. Oh, yeah, they first thing you mentioned in that free agency, wide receiver, this, that, and the other thing. And what a great exchange on the Justin Blackman topic with Ryan O'Halloran. That was outstanding. It was even better if you were watching the deadpan way Dave Caldwell delivered it. No, it's not. Hey, he's got a big cap rate. No, he doesn't. Do you see any downside? Nope. It was beautiful. We well documented Ryan's belief that Justin Blackman can't help this football team and most of us feel otherwise. A luxury, though, is how they termed it, if they're able to get him in this year. More coming up, including the fan feedback spotlight. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today live from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios here at Everbank Field on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
You can never view it too positive. You know, I feel like as a team, you know, we played, but I think we were a better team. At some time we start slow. At times during the season where we didn't finish. So, you know, for us, we got to figure out a way to get that done and just see what changes need to be made.
Cindric Marks reflecting on the 2014 campaign, said he won't let the knee injury get him down as he's got to begin that rehab process.
Man, I hope he doesn't lose anything.
Holy smokes, Tony. I mean, we referenced yesterday, knock on wood, but, you know, Geno Atkins, probably the best defensive tackle in the game, certainly the best pass-rushing defensive tackle in the game a couple years ago, tears the ACL. He's still not back.
Yeah, and it's a little bit different in that Geno Atkins' whole game was based on explosive quickness, whereas Cindric is more athletic savvy, and so I think there's a better chance of the type of player that Cindric Marks is coming back to full strength as opposed to a Geno Atkins, just because of the way they play the game, you know. And ACL reconstruction, I've been there, done that, had one in 1992, I believe it was, and it took me about a year to come back to feel normal, but I was playing at 11 months.
Would they use rubber bands back then?
No, they still did it the same way. But I mean, just the rehab process, I mean, you know, just like everything else medically, I mean, they've improved it so much that they've lowered the amount of time that it is to come back. So, you know, I think he's going to be fine, but you know, they're going to have to monitor his reps and limit his availability in the season, you know, early on, control the snaps, control the swelling, control everything about what Cindric Marks does. But you know, the good thing is that, you know, Ziggy Hood ended up having a really solid year. When I think at the beginning, I had a lot of questions about Ziggy Hood. And then Avery Jones came on and played very well. Tyson Alualu in the last couple weeks, with Roy Miller being unavailable, played exceptionally well. And I think that he will be brought back because I think he's a good football player.
It's interesting you bring him up as we welcome in Jessica Blaylock, fresh off Dave Caldwell's epically long press conference.
I will find my way onto every show
we
today
love you
at some point.
That's great. We love you for it. Tyson Alualu, Jeff was just referencing. Dave said, we want to have him back. We'd like to re-sign him. Notably to me, he said about Cecil Shorts, we haven't had that conversation yet. He also said, one reference I picked up was that, I feel pretty good about our three young receivers, speaking of Lee, Robinson,
right,
and Hearns, and also said, we could have used a veteran receiver more this year than I think we'll need one next year, which none of those are exactly ringing endorsements or seeing number 84 return here.
Yeah, and I mean, you can read into it as much as you want. I read it into more the fact that when it came to Tyson, Dave said after the last game, he went to him and said, hey, if we can make it happen, we want to bring you back. Whereas when he was asked about Cecil Shorts, it was, we haven't had that conversation yet. Need to talk to the coaches. In my opinion, that means bye, Cecil.
Right. Which we expect. We're
we
not
expect
trying to,
it. Yeah, it's not. It's not like we're
Cecil.
Right. It's not a surprise. It's not like we're breaking any news here that we thought Cecil would probably be gone after this season.
Well, and you combine that with, you know, his conversation about wide receiver, you know, being very
deep, prominent, good draft, in fact, good value in the top 10 for a wide receiver.
He was also talking about in free agency. So, you know, they talked about free agency specifically, wide receiver and interior defensive line. Those were the two.
And they're pretty stout on interior defensive line. Not that, you know, you can always use another body, but that is one thing about Cindric Marks and Roy Miller being hurt going into the offseason. You feel good about the overall position group, not just the front line guys. I want to go back to a couple of the Blackman comments. Started with, you know, look, we hope and pray for Justin's, you know, health, basically,
right.
And we have to treat it like a luxury if he does come back. We're not going to count on it, but at the same time, he said that they hope to know by the time the draft rolls around, which is interesting because that seems to indicate it could impact their draft plans as to whether or not they add another wide receiver. I think a lot of us here, we talked about it off the air today, Jeff and Tony and I have been talking about it for a while.
You know, let me bring something up there, because I don't think that he's talking about that time frame that would impact his draft. He would just like to know for his football team, not for his draft position or draft thinking.
Wouldn't it help though to have every piece of information available to him?
Well, I mean, you know, in a perfect world, Dave Caldwell would like to know what the league's position is on it right now.
I got you.
But I don't think that Justin Blackman would change anything so whether they said he's good to return, and now all of a sudden
you're not going to draft a receiver anymore.
When he talks about it being a luxury, that means we're going to ignore the possibility of having him back. If we get him, that's great.
And that's just the timetable.
Exactly.
And they've always taken that approach that, hey, if we get Justin back, that's fantastic, but we're not counting on that when it comes to our plans.
When O'Halloran and Dave Caldwell having a nice exchange about Justin Blackman, did you scoot like 6 inches to the right?
I did a little bit because I always sit by O'Halloran during the press conference, and when he and Dave start going back and forth, I'm like, this is him.
I was kind of surprised by, you know, because Ryan said that, you know, he does have a problem with kind of that thinking about, you know, wanting to have him back. Justin Blackman's a good guy.
It starts with though. If Ryan has been on this program, and so he said it on the air, I'm not talking out of school, anything he said, you know, in confidence. He has said he doesn't think Justin Blackman's an impact player. He doesn't think he's very good to begin with. That's where it starts with him.
Is he blind?
I agree. I think he's in a minority of one or a very small one on that as well. And I think it was a fair point to bring up if you want to talk about a culture of guys you can trust.
I totally understand that part of it. But you also, I think, you have to get to know Justin Blackman. I mean, Justin Blackman hasn't hurt anybody but himself. You know, Justin Blackman is a good guy. He's got issues. If he can get those issues worked out to where that good guy can come out, then that's a good thing. You know, and not only is it a good thing for him, it's a good thing that he's a very talented football player. But to be able to just to cast aside the possibility or the desire to bring back a premium player is crazy in my mind. Absolutely crazy.
It is a minority opinion there, I think, to be sure.
Certainly on this show, it is.
As far as that goes. Well, yeah, and really, anybody who covers the team, I don't think that anybody thinks that if you knew Justin Blackman was never going to have another personal issue in your life, what team in the National Football League wouldn't want him on their roster?
Right.
It's crazy.
Look, they're not going to bring him back. You know, if he's going to be a danger to the culture or a danger to other people in our community, they're not going to do that. You know, if Justin Blackman gets his life squared away, then he will be back. And I hope he does, because I like Justin Blackman.
We're not going to get into the fan feedback spotlight today. We'll actually leave it open, because we'll have Johnny O on with us next Monday, kind of more of a year in review type feel to it. We asked you today, what's your favorite memory from the 2014 season? So still plenty of time to think about that, and we'll share some of your thoughts on Monday. Jessica, as we wrap up your second appearance on the or third appearance. Yeah, crosstalk count as a separate one. I don't know. But what else? Anything else jump out to you from what Dave Caldwell had to say?
That they feel like the plan is working. I mean, I think that, you know, Brent Martineau threw that question out there. So you have no doubt right now that the plan is working. And Dave said, we have no doubt right now. And the thing that stood out to me is when he said, I think we've won more games in the first 2 years than I was expecting. So they were very, very realistic with their expectations for these first few seasons. And knowing how much roster turnover there was going to be and so forth, that stood out to me. And then secondly, that Dave admitted that maybe one of his mistakes this year was not having more of a veteran presence with how many rookies they were starting. So to me, the expectations for these first two seasons, where they are, that the plan is still working from their perspective. And the one thing that maybe Dave would have done a little bit differently looking back on this season.
So they had 7 wins, but it's like Tony said, maybe it was more a case, we thought we'd win 1 last year, maybe 5 this year. And, you know, taking that step, because I can't believe once, whether they won 4 last year or not, I don't think for a second they thought they were only going to win 3 games this year. I know that Dave talked about, hey, putting ourselves in position
to
win these games.
He said four to seven.
So I think it was clearly a disappointment in terms of the actual win total. But I'll go back to the conversation we had with him in London, Tony, where he said, year one, you're just, like he said today, you're just trying to put the pieces together, build a culture. Year two, be competitive in the fourth quarter of these football games. Year three, in the games that you're right there, win those games. Now, don't settle for being competitive. And in year four, be the team that the other team wants to be competitive with in the fourth quarter and have a, it's got to be a dynamic change. Now, I didn't hear the comments that led to it, Jessica. You heard the whole thing. Just final thought here. On Twitter today, several people referencing the fact that it looked like Dave Caldwell was downplaying playoff expectations for 2015. At which a lot of people say, yeah, are you crazy? They only won seven games the last 2 years. But did you get that sense that he was trying to make sure that that bar wasn't out there, that playoffs are the goal for – they're always the goal.
No,
I
feel like actually the opposite.
Really?
I feel like with everything they spoke about, you know, he talked about getting text messages from people around the league saying, hey, we wish we could be as patient as you guys were. We wish we could do some similar things. And he's like, that's not the text messages you want to get. You want to get the text messages saying, hey, congratulations on being in the postseason. Everything came back to the disclaimer of – the expectations are there. We want to see the results. He said it. I want to see the results for us. I want to see the results for the city of Jacksonville. We want to be talking at this time next year about preparing for, you know, the postseason. You know, I thought everything came back to the expectation is to win. The expectation is to get better, to win, to get to the playoffs, to be competitive. I didn't pick up on that there was a limitation in where they think they can be moving forward.
Tony, final thought for the new year?
Let's get some wins next year. I do think that the expectations for this team are going to change, and a lot of fans are going to be pleasantly surprised by what the plan is going to be for this team in this offseason and the way they're going to spend in free agency. So I'm looking forward to getting really started with that in 3 months, and we'll talk about it in the meantime between now and then. And until then, Happy New Year, everybody.
Jessica, final thought for you? I know it's not your final thought of the day, but come on.
Jags going 16-0 next year, Super Bowl, baby!
Knew it right there.
Can't wait!
For me, honestly, I so want this regime to have the success. I don't want it to be, you know what, next year is a bump in the road. We get rid of Gus Bradley. Somebody else comes in. I want Dave Caldwell, Gus Bradley, because I believe in the sincerity of these guys, that they believe that they've got a vision beyond just the player procurement and on the field. I really think they've embraced the franchise building as a whole and integrated themselves in the community. There's so, from a personal standpoint, couldn't think of two better guys to work with.
Absolutely.
In those positions in the NFL, easier, more accommodating.
And Shad's committed to them long term.
Well,
from what it sounded like. I mean.
Right, but long term. At what point you go 3-13 next year, and what is long term when you've won 10 games in 3 years? You know, let's hope that's not even a conversation next year. I just want it to be these guys that bring the success, and hopefully in a hurry, to the Jacksonville Jaguars. That does it for us. Thanks to Tyler Devitt producing today. He'll be back with us to start the new year. We'll be back next Monday with John Osier. So for Jeff Logman, for all the hosts and all the guests and players and all the people behind the scenes that helped us this year, thanks to 1010XL. Thanks to the Jacksonville Jaguar organization for making the show possible in the form that it exists in right now. We'll try to do it again even better in 2015. For Jeff Logman, for Fat Tony, for Jessica Blaylock and Tyler Devitt, for Lauren Brooks as well, for Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. XL Primetime coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.